It's been estimated that the women's sports industry will be worth $1 billion by 2030 in the UK alone. It's a huge opportunity.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, I'm sitting down with Niamh Tallon, the co-founder of Her Sport. Niamh is building a brand new media business right here in Ireland, and she's one of the brightest minds in the media space here. She has built Her Sport to cover and promote female sports and female sports stars. It is an incredible journey, and she's building a huge business. We go deep into the media business, what it means to be an online publication, and why female sports stars are massively underrepresented in traditional media. Here is my chat with Niamh Tallon, the co-founder of Her Sport. But first, quick message from our partners. Thanks to my partner, Square. Everything your business needs, like payments, menu management, online ordering, chatting endlessly about the weather. Well, you're on your own there. Square. Everything your business needs. Almost. Visit square.com. If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from my Connacht offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Connacht offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Connacht offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials from my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day, bring your team, no catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Connacht offices. Now, on with today's episode. Niamh, welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me.
This is take two. I need to apologize to you before we start. Me and Niamh were just about to sit down and do this podcast in December 15th, say, just for Christmas, and I had to rush off to an emergency. So my apologies and thank you for being so patient.
Absolutely. No, not at all. And sure, look, we're flexible. We understand where you're coming from.
So you're in the business.
Happy to be here again.
You know what it's like. You know what it's like trying to get content out. What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm the founder of Her Sport. We started off, I suppose, as a media organization covering women's sport. There's a huge gap of sharing the stories and sharing the news around women's sport. So that's where we started. But since then, we've built on a couple of different arms. So we do a lot of education with clubs, with schools, in workplaces. And then we do different kind of club programs. We have a membership program, and then we have our merchandise in that as well. So yeah, we've built on a couple of different things. And looking forward to, I suppose, what the next year holds, particularly, as I think people seem like quite comfortable to come back out to do events and that type of thing. Which is great.
It's like that old joke though, if you're rich and you want to become poor, you buy a boat. If you're rich and you want to become poor, you start a media business. Why would you start a media business?
Yeah, I actually did an internship straight after my undergrad in a media company, in a publishing company, and I thought, like, no, this is really tough. Like, it's not my game. I don't come from a journalism background. So that was one thing I was almost sure that I wouldn't do. And then I saw the gap, I suppose, with the lack of women's sports news coverage and people sharing the stories. People didn't know the personalities, and I suppose the ripple effect that then had on girls and women dropping out of sport. My background is in marketing, and I had an understanding, I suppose, from the marketing lens of, you know, why girls and women might be dropping out of sport and that type of thing as well. So I suppose I understood it, and having been at the publishing company, I knew how it worked. And I was like, look, I'm going to try it and see how it goes. I understand the business model. I understand, sport. I want to make an impact and make a change. So I started it. So I suppose what I mentioned earlier in terms of the different arms that we've built onto it, particularly with the education, like, I'm trying to diversify the revenue streams because I understand that, you know, in times of crisis, like a pandemic or like a recession, marketing budgets can tighten up a lot. So I don't want to be solely reliant on that revenue stream.
It's good. Like, I mean, it is tough. Like, the sponsor game is tough, yeah, and the advertising game is tough, and it does fluctuate. Like you say, what was the spark? Like, you've said why, but what was the spark? Was there a moment where you're like, Yeah, I was going to do it because it's a hard decision. Like starting most companies is a hard decision, but starting a media business is a hard decision.
I probably didn't think about it too much. And I've heard other kind of founders talk about like the naivety of, you know, being an entrepreneur and possibly had some of that, but then not at the same time because both sides of my family have been involved in business. So I did have a good understanding of what it took. I think people also like, they're like, what, like, why did you start it? Like, what's the moment? And I'm kind of like, I don't have a major sob story personally. My background is in swimming and I had quite a good experience, you know, in sport. I actually had three female coaches when I was swimming. So had a really good experience. I also went to an all girls school, so I wasn't exposed to that much personally. I experienced a little bit of, I suppose, gender inequality in other sports later in life. And I saw it through friends and then also kind of around the 2016 Olympics, I would have known of performances by some athletes, female athletes that were doing really, really well. And it was really difficult to find the news and nobody knew about their stories or history that they were making. I was like, that's not right. Like they deserve the coverage as well. So I did a master's in digital marketing and I understood, you know, how to build a website, you know, how to use social media. And as I said, I understood the business model. So I was like, look, I have the skill set. But like, I did my master's in 2016. So I was 22, 23 doing it. Like, I didn't have much to lose in trying something. And all that it was going to cost me was the, you know, buying the domain name and the time to put in. So I was like, look, I'm just going to chance it and start it. It did take a little bit of a backseat for a while. I moved over to New York for about a year and a half. Tried to keep it going while I was over there. And like, we did put content out. But I always felt while I was over there that I was missing an opportunity and that I really wanted to put, you know, enough time into it. So I came back at the start of 2020 with the, you know, idea of going at it full time. So myself and my co-founder, Mohammed, he left his job in KPMG. We started the two of us. We had a couple of people supporting us from the journalism perspective and we've just built it from there. So, 3 years ago.
This is quite a broad question. Why do female athletes not get the same representation as male athletes?
I suppose you have to think about like from a societal perspective and a historical perspective, like where have women, you know, been in society? It's actually going to be the 50 years this year that the marriage ban is removed, that, you know, when you leave your, or when you get married, that, that you had to leave your job. Like that's, it's actually only 50 years ago that that's gone. Like, so if you're thinking of like where women have been, in society, like that has a huge impact. You know, going back to a couple athletes like Maeve Kyle, when she was competing, like people would have been telling her that she should have been at home with her kids and you know, spitting at her when she's out running and that type of thing. So people had quite a perception of that, like women should be at home being the homemaker, you know, minding kids and family. And, you know, I know this conversation around like gender pay gap in the workplace and there's kind of a balancing effort being put into that as well. And the same really applies for sport. Like what are people's perceptions of what is feminine? You know, they're changing. So yeah, it's, there's a lot to it. Like the 1993, another anniversary this year, it's the 30th anniversary for the Irish rugby team for their first international game. So it's only 30 years ago that, you know, Ireland sent a women's rugby team to play internationally. Ladies Gaelic Football Association will be 50 in 2024. So it's still very new. And it was a man's world. Like rewind 100 years, like where were women? So that is a huge part of it. So it's starting to level up. It's not solely an Irish issue. 4% of sports media coverage goes to women in sport globally.
Four.
Yeah. We're up to six here. It's not much better, but it's marginally better. So yeah, it's something that is just going to evolve over time. And you know, we're seeing the product. People are interested in going to the games, like looking at, say, the Women's Euros. Like it was like, you know, sellout attendances. We're seeing more sponsors get behind the teams, which is great. So the sponsorship will hugely, you know, change things and help things to put women's sport in the right place.
I don't know whether it's I'm becoming more aware of it or the coverage is getting better, but it feels like there was a tipping point a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was around the the women's Euros? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd say probably a little bit earlier in Ireland anyway. Like, we've had some really, really good results. Like, if you go back to, 2012, like, I suppose something that we maybe forget is that Katie Taylor had to do an exhibition fight to get women's boxing into the Olympics. So, like, you're talking about, like, you know, why we're on the back foot. Like, there's another example.
You talk about things not being long ago. That's not long ago.
No. No, it's
and
so
like
recent.
Now she's like a national hero, yeah. And like there's a massive Katie Taylor effect, the knock-on effect. But that's not long ago.
No, not long ago at all. Like, there was women's boxing, it wasn't in the Olympics. So, you know, Katie Taylor had to, you know, go out, do an exhibition fight, you know, basically try and get the Olympic Council to let them into the Olympics, and she did. So we've had huge success with the likes of Katie Taylor, like, from the Olympics to her, like, professional career. Like, she's such a superstar. We've had, you know, Ellen Keane has been on the scene for quite a long time, but, you know, getting a medal you know, at the Paralympics is unbelievable. Then you have Kelly Harrington is doing really well, Leona Maguire, so Ciara McGeen, another one. So there's a lot of, I suppose, different athletes that are leading in their respective fields that are then driving things forward. Like, the fact that the women's national team have now qualified for the World Cup, that'll be another push forward, and we'll see more about women's sports. So we've had really, really good results, and I think that has definitely you know, put that out there further in the media and supported things changing. And there have also been, like, pressures behind the scenes from maybe athletes to, you know, change how different things are going on and different things coming into effect. Like, I know one of the things that's happening is that the national governing bodies have to have 40% female representation on their board. Excellent. And that's something that Sport Ireland and the government are putting in place. So there are things that are changing from a structural perspective as well. But look, the results have helped it. Pressure, I suppose, internationally, like, a lot of people are conscious of this as well. Obviously, organisations like us are coming out in different parts of the world trying to cover more and more women's sports. And mindset, I suppose, is changing too.
It's really interesting. I'm a big believer in business. You have to be able to kind of see. I think we talked about this during our breakfast. You're far more likely to succeed and do things if you can see it within your own environment. Yeah. If you have role models that are close to you, that look like you, sound like you, come from the same place as you, I think the power of that cannot be overlooked. Mm-hmm. I think to have positive role models who've had success as well, that's important. Mm-hmm. I was at an MMA event up in Oma about 6 months ago, and like, the standard of talent was ridiculous. You had these 17, 18-year-old just absolute killers, like professional grade athletes. Mm-hmm. I was chatting to their coaches afterwards. I was like, what is going on? Like, why is the talent level so high? And they're like, well, for good or for bad, it's the Conor McGregor effect. Mm-hmm. He came to prominence 10 years ago, and there was a whole bubble of Irish MMA stars that came out of age at that time. And he goes, those guys were seven. So they've trained for now 10 years, and they've just had that level of training and intensity for 10 years. So, I mean, who knows? Do you see it now with younger boxers?
Yeah, absolutely. So Katie Taylor is such a role model for, you know, girls and boys. But, like, in the summer, there was seven or eight medals from the women's side. I think it was seven at the European Championships. Mm. Unbelievable. Mm. So, like, we have so many role models in women's boxing, but a lot of them would have looked up to Katie Taylor, you know, had posters on their wall and you know, seen her around. And, you know, like, looking at the depth we have there now, of course more girls are going to go into boxing. They're seeing these, like, brilliant role models. Like, you know, Kelly Harrington is, you know, one of the apples of Ireland's eye at the moment. You know, Amy Broadhurst has done phenomenal. You have, you know, Lisa and Aoife O'Rourke, two sisters. So, of course, like, two sisters or three sisters could be like, come on, let's go and do it together, you know?
Stories are powerful.
Yeah, we've
talked about this a lot. Like, stories are powerful.
Yeah, and look at the soccer team. Like, there's so many little girls are going to watch the team play when they're playing in Tallinn, when they're playing at home, and they're really, really inspired. But also, that team has been so good in terms of interacting with the players or with the kids. Like, they're coming over, they're chatting to them, they're taking pictures. Like, a friend of mine, her cousin is mad into football, and she has one of Katie McCabe's boots, so her and her friend got a boot each, and like, they're thrilled. So like, they're the kind of things that they'll remember, and just the girls are so accessible and understand the legacy that they're leaving behind, and you hear them speak about it often. So I suppose there's quite a consciousness in female athletes at the moment of the impact that they are having. Sonia O'Sullivan, I think, has reflected on maybe the impact she has had, but also could have had. I think she feels that maybe she could have done a little bit more when she was an athlete, because now it's really interesting when you ask like kids like about Sonia Sullivan, they're kind of like, who? So I think she understands.
It's quite a while ago, to be fair, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a certain generation that like idolized Sonia still, and like obviously she was such a superstar, but if I asked my 10-year-old cousin, like, do you know who Sonia Sullivan is? Probably not. So I think she realizes maybe there was a tiny bit more she could have done at the time. She's spoken about it a little bit, but she had such a huge impact on people as well. So yeah, that's huge, like making it really accessible. I brought my cousin to the Connacht Leinster game a couple of weeks ago, and she's not playing rugby. She's playing a bit of football. She's running a little bit, doing karate. And it's just to get her out there to start recognising female athletes, to see them, you know, perform in stadiums. Like sometimes she watches it on TV, but I want her there
to disconnect.
Seeing it in the stadium and you know, watching the athletes and chatting to them if she could. So Bavin Parsons wasn't playing because she was off to go to the Sevens the next day, but she was there watching Connacht, and Bavin's an ambassador of ours.
Oh, brilliant.
Went over and I was like, hey Bavin, I was like, my cousin actually got her sport calendar for Christmas, and I was like, Isabella, I was like, this is Bavin. I was like, she's in February in the calendar.
That's magic.
So yeah. Isabella was kind of looking at her, and I don't think the penny fully dropped. And then I was chatting to Bavin, and then Isabella turned to me and she was like, oh, she's in the calendar. And I was like, yeah. And then we got a picture. So yeah, like that's...
You'd swear we planned that. We've got the calendar right here.
But like, that's huge for her. Like she's going into school then and is like, I met the girl that's in this calendar.
That's very cool.
And like, Bavin's so nice. And of course that it would like chat and stuff. But
the youngest ever player to play senior international rugby for Ireland. Very cool.
She's 16.
Really?
Yeah. She played when she was 16. So
that's
but much. Like, you know, she like the players, like whatever the different sports are, they're happy to kind of, you know, take a minute and chat to the girls. And like that'll, you know, Isabella may never play rugby, but she will always remember talking to this girl who played an international sport, who took the time to take a photograph with her. And that's obviously something I'm trying to do in my family, but that's what we're trying to do everywhere. And, you know, bring kids to the games, bring boys and girls to the games, bring like boys from the perspective so that they have those role models too. So many people look up to a lot of these athletes, which is great, but we also need to try and like shift some of the like misogynism that is there and ensure it's not passed down to the next generations. Like going back to Isabella, so she's been playing football for about 5 years, and there's a boy in her road that came up to her and a couple of her friends and was like, oh yeah, girls are so bad at football and shouldn't be playing football and all this kind of stuff. And he's like 9. And I was like, where is that coming from? Like someone put that in his head, or he's heard something. So why has he got this attitude? So they were, I suppose, confident enough to say, we're not going to play with him anymore. He's only been playing for 2 years. We're better than he is and all this kind of thing. There's no difference between kids that are playing when they're like 8 or 9. Like at that stage, they've had no like growth differences. So they can play together. Like they're just playing on the road. So I was really disappointed to hear that. So I think it's really important that, you know, from a club perspective or from a family perspective, if you bring those boys when they're young to the games and watch the games, there's no way they're better than any of the girls that are playing on the pitch or that are boxing or whatever. They will get the respect. They will grow up and they'll have respect for the athletes, and then we'll start to shift that and hopefully like dampen any of the misogynism that is still there. But it's important to make sure it doesn't go on to the next generation, because like you hear of like people, they're like, oh, I could beat Serena Williams in a tennis match. And they're like, you know, your average man who has maybe never played any tennis, but just think it's because they're a man, they beat her. And it's just not true. Like, so yeah, it's about trying to, I suppose, foster that respect among boys and men as well. And the next generation is key. Like, look, obviously if we can chat to people of different age groups, like I challenge, you know, my own friends, my peers, other people that I meet about lots of different things when it comes to kind of gender equality. But obviously the next generation is the future, so they're critical to speak to and to just try and build that into.
Is there much sexism still in sport?
Probably depends on the sport. You might actually have more respect sometimes in the sporting environment than your general public, which I think
makes
is interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I think like, you know, Dara Green is an ambassador for us. He swims, and I've talked to him about it a bit before. Like, he has a sister who plays either county football or county camogie. He's seen it. He knows the grind that she puts in as well. And he also swims with different female athletes, and there's a couple of good breaststrokers in there, which is his event. And he's like, oh yeah, if I'm not paying attention, you know, the girls could get me. So they're always like training together, racing together. And I come from a swimming background as well. Like, there is, you get in the lane based on how fast you are, and you train with the boys. There's never any kind of division. So there is a lot of kind of respect there. I think, you know, in those types of sports, athletics, swimming, you know, gymnastics, a couple of those sports, there can be quite an amount of respect. But yeah, there can be an element of misogynism in some other sports. You know, there's still squabbles when it comes to like access to pitches, or you know financial support, maybe when it comes to kit or when it comes to equipment across a range of sports as well. So I suppose it's just about trying to talk to people one at a time and get them to understand where you're coming from and get them to support and on board. And you know, if you have a sister, talk to her and ask her what her experience was. Some people like don't notice it. Like, we're pretty much auto-tuned to just like crack on with our own life, and you know, we might say we're not self-absorbed, but mostly we are self-absorbed. Like, we might have a look around us and see some things that are going on, but you know, particularly if you're, you know, very dedicated to your sport and there's a lot of training, and you might, if you're training from an elite perspective as well, like, it's tunnel vision and you're doing your own thing, so you don't always look around you. But sometimes it is, I suppose, to the men that might be listening, like, look around you, see what is going on, or just ask someone, like, what's your experience like? And they might have a completely different experience. You know, we've heard of, you know, when it comes to like expenses being covered in Gaelic games, like whether it's like hurling, camogie, football, whatever it is, that there has been a disparity. So I know the Gaelic Players Association have worked to level that up, but digging a little bit deeper into it, the budget that is allocated to cover those expenses doesn't actually always cover the entirety of some people's expenses. The GAA has the budget to cover the rest of it. And I can't remember if it was in camogie or in football, and possibly in both, they don't necessarily have the budget or haven't put something in place to actually cover up the rest of the expenses. So say they have 70% of their expenses covered, the other 30% actually the player is still taking on, where on the men's side they're not. So that's something, you know, they're talking about amalgamating the GAA, the LGFA and the Camogie Association. So hopefully that goes through, and then we start to see just more improvements, you know, for the women on that side. You know, when you look at the soccer team now playing for Ireland, you will get paid the same. So previously it had been €2,500 per appearance for Ireland for the men and €500 for the women. So now it's €2,000. Male or female, it doesn't matter.
Oh, brilliant.
So there's cool. Just some changes that are coming through. And like I said earlier, with the board makeup in the national governing bodies, you know, that will create a difference as well. So
what are the biggest challenges female athletes face? Is it finances? Is it access? You've mentioned a number of them there. Access,
yeah,
finances,
it's both for
respect.
Sure. Yeah. So if you are in an Olympic sport, Olympic or Paralympic sport, I suppose your athletics, your rowing, your running, gymnastics, your financial support will depend on your performance. So that's nothing to do with gender.
If you end
up on a podium or you're making an international appearance, you will be judged on the same criteria as your male counterparts. So when you're on the elite stage there, it's quite fair. That doesn't mean that your sponsorship opportunities may or may not be different, depending on who you are, what sport you're in. And that's down to, like, from a media perspective, making sure we're giving them exposure so that they do have the sponsorship opportunities. I've seen a lot of the female athletes take that into their own control, build their brand, build their social media presence, and make the opportunities come to them. So that, I suppose, is a really nice thing that social media and online has created for people. So if they put in the time, they see the reward.
Yeah.
When it comes to sports like rugby, GAA, soccer, those types of sports, you can see, yes, the pitch access can be tough. We're building, like, you have to build the interest in the sports to get people going to the games and some of those things to balance out. It's not just going to happen at a click of the fingers. Like, we've obviously seen the professional contracts have been introduced for Irish women's rugby now, which is great. So hopefully that will, you know, kick things forward again. And there needs to be spend in marketing for some of those things. Like we need to invest in the marketing and make sure that we're, you know, letting people know that the games are on and encouraging people down, which will then generate more revenue that we can then invest in the teams and support the teams with. At grassroots level, there can be difficulty in those sports when it comes to pitch access, particularly when it comes to Gaelic games, because the three associations are separate.
Okay.
So the Gaelic, the GAA owns pretty much all the pitches in the country. So depending on the club that you're in, someone may turn around and be like, sure, we own the pitches. It's like, yeah, but we're paying membership and we're, you know, contributing to the club and we're involved in the fundraisers and all that kind of thing. So depending on the club, there's some clubs that I've heard that the structures are great. It's a little tough because every club is a little bit different. But again, going back to the amalgamation, hopefully that goes through and it takes the, I suppose, pressure and control out of what's going out, like in the clubs, and that there's a whole change across the board that just levels things up for everybody. Because I suppose going into the GAA, like we've all been involved in supporting the organisation over years and years and years. And like I've spoken to my granny about it, and she said how they used to like wash the jerseys, make the sandwiches, be involved in the fundraisers, like put on the plays to fundraise for the local team. But nobody cared about like them playing. She said they used to play for exercise and nobody kept count. So it's unfair for people to say like, oh, we own it, without looking deeper and saying,
it's a very traditional
but we
attitude.
Have contributed, yeah. Like community has contributed to building the club to where it is. Like if you want to, you know, take all the women out over the past number of years and like we don't contribute to anything, like then it's fair to say, but it's not. Like you've had, you know, women involved in, you know, in coaching or in organizing different things that are going on and supporting the fundraisers. So there is an element of ownership there by the women of the community. It's just not necessarily recognized in every club. So that's something that really needs to be leveled up. But the respect, again, it's kind of club to club or sport to sport. But we are seeing efforts to change. Like I'm getting more messages from coaches, from people on committees that are asking like, you know, can we do this? Or we're being invited in to do like workshops that educates the girls, that educates some of the coaching panel, and it's great to have like male coaches there trying to get an understanding of different things as well. So there's some of the I suppose barriers that girls and women are facing, and then we also have, you know, creating the right environment and supports for people. So women are different to men biologically, like we're different. The types of programs that we're on might have to be slightly adjusted. You have to consider the menstrual cycle. You have to consider things like confidence, body image. Like, you know, if girls and women are leaving your club, like find out why they're leaving your club. Like maybe they do feel that there is an attitude towards the women's team or the girls team and they're not being treated fairly. Or maybe the way that you're coaching them has worked with how you've coached boys, but isn't working with how you've coached girls. So like there has been research done that shows that girls at like 13, 14 want to come down and enjoy the social environment and they like being there with their friends. Not that they don't want to compete, like plenty of them do, but sometimes the like playing at the highest level or very good level, that might come actually more when they're 16, 17, or for some it may never. The only thing that they want to be down there is to play socially. Not that they can't be competing, they can. It's the social outlet is what they're looking for. So it's understanding that. And also, like, I know there's been a couple of different comments around sport in general in Ireland and internationally as well, is that, like, we're focusing too much on competition and not enough on fun. And, like, I've seen that. I've experienced it, like, as an adult in a team. And you're, like, down and it's, like, torture sometimes. It's, like, where is the fun? Like, people come down here to enjoy themselves. So it's making sure that that's retained. But that is very much applicable for boys and for men and for adults as well. So, why are they coming down? Like, make sure that they enjoy it. And if you don't ask, you're never going to find the answer. So
bring me back to building your media business. Bring me back to the early stages. What was kind of like the first kind of couple of milestones you wanted to hit? What were you going to go, right, we're going to build a business and this is how we're going to do it. So step me through. If people want to like build a media business.
I didn't know that we had any milestones at the start, I'm not going to lie.
What was your plan? What was your, say your plan? So once you come back from New York, you're like, right, we're going in this direction. This is what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Originally, when we set it up in 2018, there wasn't really any milestones. Like we put out some content. Some of it got like really, really good traction at the time, which kind of proved, I suppose, there was a demand for it. But as I said, I was away and Mohammed was working full time. So we were just doing our best, I suppose. But yeah, we both stepped out of full-time work and we knew we were employable. We knew what we were worth in other people's businesses. So from that perspective, we were like, this has to work from a business sense. It's not just only about the impact. It has to work as a business. So we had put the clock on and it was, the deadline was the Olympics and Paralympics of 2020, which obviously got pushed into 2021. So we didn't officially say that we had extended our deadline by a year. But no, it had been proven enough to us.
You started just before COVID, had you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it had been proven enough that like the social channels were growing, that we were, you know, building a brand, that people were interested, the demand was there. So like we went from, you know, less than 5,000 people following us across every single social media platform, to now we are at over 110,000 people follow us in 3 years. I'm not going to tell you exactly what it was after year one because I can't remember off the top of my head.
But 3 years, that's
yeah, in 3 years,
growth.
And I know we doubled between this year and last year. I can't remember exactly what the difference was for our first year, but they were some of the things, was like to make sure that we have enough of an audience to make it attractive for brands to work with us and support us. And that was the revenue model, was, you know, working with brands from an advertising and sponsorship perspective. We have created an audience that people are interested in getting in front of. You know, on some of our platforms, it's, you know, quite female heavy. So if you want to connect with a female audience, it's a perfect place. Mm. Whether it's, you know, health and fitness products, food related, whatever it is, yeah, obviously that's a perfect fit. But for other products or other services that you have, if you just want to connect with women, we have a, you know, a big loyal and engaged audience that's there. You know, the purchasing power usually resides with women for a lot of things. Like they can be decision makers for a lot of household purchase decisions. Connect with them. It's there. It's a quality audience, and we've evaluated other you know, players in the game, I suppose, to see how they got on, and something that we've retained and something we're really proud of is that engagement rate. So, yeah, the first year was really about building the brand. We did a couple of partnerships with people. And then the next year it was much more solid in relation to working with more partners and building that up. And then that happened for 2022 as well. So yeah, now we're in 2023 and we have, you know, a couple of things over the line already, which is great. I, you know, was, you know, discussing some deals with people for months last year, and one of them came through in January and I was like, happy days. That's like, we're off to a good start. So yeah, that's, we've more people coming to us as well. Like they understand the audience, they understand the value of connecting. Like this, it's been estimated that the women's sports industry will be worth 1 billion by 2030 in the UK alone. So okay. it's huge opportunity. Like we haven't, like there's more audiences being put out there. There's more opportunities for brands to get in front of people that are making purchase, like household purchase decisions.
So for someone not familiar with Hersport, what kind of content do you make?
Yeah, so we do news on the website, we do interviews, we do different shows. So one of the shows we did in 2022 was a Six Nations show with Opal. So we had like a review of the games that would have been on one weekend, and then the upcoming weekend we would have done previews of the games. So we had one of our journalists on, and we would have done a lot of work with Hannah Tyrrell on that. And then we continued in the rugby space, and we did another show with Energia, that was around the league and also around the Interpros. So, you know, for this year, I want to get a similar set up with Gaelic Games. There's a lot of opportunity in soccer as well. We've done things like watch parties in soccer, which has gone really, really well.
That trend is going crazy.
Yeah, for every for all the World Cup qualifiers from September time, I think it was, we had watch parties, and it's bringing our community together.
It's a great
idea. Wants to celebrate together.
And reaction videos as well are going massively viral. Yeah. Like you see like the likes of Joe Rogan, he'll watch like 3 hours of UFC, do a podcast with a few people in the studio reacting.
Yeah.
And millions of people will watch.
Watching, yeah.
It's a
The watch parties are brilliant.
Thing.
Like it's about, like if you look at what's happening in men's football, for example, it's a whole, and it applies for rugby and soccer and some other sports, but particularly those sports where it's quite gender split, like you either watch the men's match or you watch the women's match, you're not watching, say, in athletics, everybody competing together. So with that, there's a whole, like, atmosphere experience around these games. You know, people are like, oh, I'm going to, you know, go with my friends. We're going to go down to the pub. We're going to meet people. You know, we're going to go to the Aviva. We're going to go to Crow Park, whatever it is. You need to create excitement and experience for people. So we went over to England to watch the USA England friendly last year, and they had a whole performance beforehand. You know, there was music, there was flags, loads of excitement built around it. Maybe fireworks as well. I can't remember exactly. I feel like there was flames somewhere, but it was exciting. You know, it was a show. That is what needs to happen. It's like, go and look at what they do in America. Replicate it. It make it an experience.
It's entertainment as well. It's sport, but it's also entertainment.
Yeah, like I went to a couple of American football games when I lived in the US. And like, I went to watch like Army versus Navy, and they had like planes. They have like, it's a whole show. It's a whole production. Like, look at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
How many people are watching the sport, and how many people are there for the show? You know, it'd be interesting to know what the split is. But that's what the opportunity is there for women's sport, and the people that are marketing it have to make it an experience. You have to do it with, you know, getting people to Croke Park. If you want people to go to the LGFA and to the Camogie finals, make it fun. Make it somewhere that people go and they have a great time, and it's really enjoyable, and it's more than just the sport. Obviously, the sport is great, but for people to go down and for it to become part of your culture, even to go, like, you don't have to be in the stadiums, go to the pub to watch it, go to someone's house to watch it, whatever it might be, like, that's all part and parcel of it. So that's what we're trying to do with the watch parties, is bring people together, make it enjoyable. People with the same interests are coming together. You don't necessarily have that so much in women's sport, but also among women to do that. Like, men will meet their friends to go and watch games. Women obviously go as well, but you need to create that culture as well, like a fandom. We don't have the fandom yet, so that's what we're trying to do, is create that. So for the World Cup, watch this space.
What's been the biggest challenge you faced as an entrepreneur in the last couple of years?
Resource. I don't know how many times people have told you that, probably plenty.
Financial resource or what?
Yeah, you see, it all ties in together. So if I have more people, I can do more things, but to have the people, I have to be able to pay them. So yeah, it's just building slowly and slowly. You know, the more partnerships that we do, obviously the more kind of financial resource that's available for us to execute more. So like the watch parties, if we can bring a sponsor in on that, we can hold more. If we have some of the shows, like if people want to hear more about, you know, what's going on in ladies football, and a partner can support us on that, I can get in, you know, more expert hosts. You know, I can have the team that's there to produce the different show that we're doing. Like we do something like fun content and that as well. Like if we've partners on, like we have a series called You Laugh, You Lose that people find really funny, like putting people head to head and trying to make them, you know, laugh, and other kind of viral type content. The more people we have working with us on these projects, the more that we have the capacity to do. And the same goes for the workshops. By the time this podcast comes out, we should have announced that we're doing a partnership with Riley around getting out to more schools to around around women's sport, around, you know, body image, menstrual cycle, and encouraging girls school to stay involved in sport, get back involved in sport. If you haven't found the sport that you like, try something different. So it's great for us that what we are finding was sometimes the schools don't have the budget. So if we can work with more partners to support us on getting out to the schools, obviously that allows us to speak to more kids, boys and girls, around understanding the landscape of women's sport, the opportunities, and encouraging them to stay involved.
Personally, though, as an entrepreneur building a business, mm-hmm. what's been the biggest challenge you faced personally?
Me? There's so much to do all the time, like a lot lands on your plate. So that is tough, and being like having to put on all the different hats. I know that if I had the time to do one area of the business, I could get very good at a particular area and like love doing it. And like, you know, if I was doing like the interviews all the time, like, yeah, I'd really enjoy that, but I can't do that. So it's building, bringing people in to be able to pass the baton, I suppose. Like now we have, you know, more journalists working with us, which means that that's covered, where previously, like myself and Mohammed were involved in doing that. we're looking at bringing in somebody in sales, which I need support on as well. Like I do a lot of that, and Mohammed supports me in that as well. But if we can have somebody to help us with that, it just divides up the time. Like here I am obviously chatting to you. So like I am the face of it. You know, I get asked to do a lot of this type of thing, which then eats into like my time and what I have available. Yeah. So it's just being stretched. We're trying to build a team. Like we're putting in for more grants and the more people that we work with, the more budget we have to hire more people and execute more. So, we have a lot of plans. So
if you could talk to Niamh of like 3 years ago, what would be the couple of key bits of advice? Everyone says like, if I knew then what I knew now, it'd be a totally different scenario. Yeah. What are the couple of key bits you'd give to yourself or like a young entrepreneur listening going, okay, I like the media business. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I suppose from my perspective, like, I feel like there's anything we've done majorly wrong? Like, probably not. Do you know, I feel like we've been very lucky in what we've done and the attitude that we've had. And I suppose the only piece of advice is probably like not to be maybe so cautious with spending. Like we can do that. Like when you start, and I've heard like a lot of people talk about this, like when you start to actually make a bit of money, you're like, oh my gosh, like you're looking at it. We need like spend, like reinvest. And like, look, if you want to even look at like, you know, Mr. Beast and his YouTube channel, like he reinvests. And then I listened to Colin and Samir as well. And they have said that, you know, when they started to make some money, they were nervous about spending it. So
it's hard though, because you come from, especially when you're bootstrapped, you come from a time, I've done this exact same thing. You come from a time of €0.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or 500 quid or 1,000. And then you make 1,000. You're like, okay, that'll, if worst case scenario, a month, 2 months, 3 months. Like it's
it can be
easy to say hard in practice. Yeah. And I think
you have to back yourself too. Like have the confidence. And like that's the thing. Like we at different times like would have maybe had a little bit of money to play with and we were quite cautious with it. Where we need to just like get out there, spend it, build a team, not be stupid about it. But
it's a fine line.
Reinvest to build more of what you're doing. Like if I hire a salesperson, like they're gonna hopefully like this, they will have paid back like their salary and then and covered the different projects that we're working on. I have to have the confidence that they'll do that. And I know they will, because I know there's loads of people that want to work with us. So I just need to support them, develop them and get them out there to do it. So there's no reason to be nervous in that respect. Like have the confidence in the roles that you believe that you need to get more off your plate so that you can work on the business and developing the business. So I suppose that would probably be my piece of advice. Like don't be too cautious. And that would have been, I suppose, to me 3 years ago. But to anybody else, like things that we found that have worked well is like, there's never too many questions to ask, too many people to talk to. Like the worst that people will say to you is, no, I don't have the time to talk to you, or they won't respond. Mm. I don't know which is worse. In relation to...
Either way, you're in no worse position than you are now.
No.
They either say literally no and you're like, grant, or they don't respond, grant.
Yeah, like don't take it as a negative if they don't get back to you. Like you're busy, they're busy, it's fine. And if someone says no, they're not being rude, they just may genuinely not have the time. But like there's people that we've asked like to chat to us and we're like, oh, they might never see this, and they come back to us and they're like a fountain of knowledge. So you just have to, I suppose, surround yourself with experts and people that are sounding boards to try and build your business. And that goes for anybody, whether it's the media business or not. I suppose from the media perspective, I've thought about it, like how like comfortable would I have been if it was like a different type of topic? Like it's very competitive, so like make sure there's a market before you.
What is media or sport?
Media. No, like I knew there was opportunity. Like we have some competition. We don't have loads of competition yet, you know. So we're quite like
who is your competition? Mainstream media.
So mainstream media would be our competition, you know, to an extent, and we have international competitors, but like. And people that might be covering like specific sports or like that type of thing. But, you know, if you're going out and you're trying to do like news or celebrity news, you have loads of competitors.
Yeah.
So what's going to make you different? Like, that's the thing. Like, don't just like jump at it because you're like, oh, I think I might enjoy this. It's a really tough industry. Like we're like, you know, you're talking about understanding like advertising and sponsorship and experience that. It's really tough. Everybody's pitching in. Who are you going to be pitching in against for these deals? Like, you know, there's different pitches that we've put in. We're like, look, we're putting this in. We know it's a long shot. We're not the perfect fit, but we have a great idea. If they go for it, great. If they don't, like, I know that we're going up against people that might seem like the more obvious choice or a better fit. And that's fine. But maybe that's the advice, is actually go and look at who are your competitors? What are you offering that's different? And do you really think that you can build something that is going to win pitches and that is going to, you know, get brands to work with you over these five other people.
Quality over time wins out, regardless of how early you are or anything like that. Me and Ben were literally having this conversation before you arrived about podcasts. Everyone's got a podcast, but everyone's got three episodes of a podcast. No one's got 100, 200, 300, like, because it's hard.
Yeah.
Doing media and doing content is extremely hard.
Oh, loads of people set up podcasts and then, like, I've seen loads of people say, oh, myself and so-and-so are doing a podcast, and then it vanishes. I don't hear anything more about it. So once they actually get into it and realize. So, yeah, look, that's, I suppose, understand your business model, how it's going to work, make sure there's an audience there for it. And honestly, that applies to any business, not just media. There has to be customers.
If you were flashing forward to like 5 years' time, what's the goal? What's the vision for Her Sport? You seem extremely driven. You seem extremely passionate. You clearly have a drive as to where you want to go with this.
We have a lot of ideas.
I can tell.
One of maybe my weaknesses.
That's an entrepreneur thing. You always have like shiny object syndrome going, oh, we could do this.
Yeah, like honestly, even we were having a meeting yesterday and it's like, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on. Like,
the focus can be hard.
Yeah, it's like this is a great idea. That's a great idea. And like, there are so many great ideas, but like, we have to know what we're resourced for. If we can get them up and running, and we can either get the like revenue stream generating enough for it to like manage itself, perfect. Or if we can get sponsors to support us on it, perfect. Like, then we'll go for it. But yeah, we have to like make sure that we're executing things well and not executing like three times as many projects or revenue streams badly or like averagely. We have to do it well. So like, yeah, 5 years time, what would I love to be doing? I'd love to have a bigger team so we can do more. I suppose I'd like to do more of the things that I enjoy. There's different areas of the business. Like I do enjoy most parts of it, but there's some things that I'd like to not have so much of it on myself or on Mohammed. We need to be able to just keep working on
what do you enjoy doing.
Oh, I enjoy doing this. That's fine. I'll come out and chat to people. I really do enjoy chatting to people. And from like the interview perspective, like I was saying earlier, like I probably really would enjoy that area of the business, but I own the business. I run the business. So I can't afford to go out and do too much of that. Like that's why we have our journalists who are far more qualified than I am. I just like meeting people and hearing the stories. I like sales. I do. Like I like coming up with the ideas and, you know, working with people on it. I suppose for me, I would probably like to meet the brands, develop the ideas and then hand it over to somebody to execute it.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, can still be involved sometimes in making, in running the different projects. Like I have, say, different brands that I work specifically in, and I'll have to see the project through from start to finish. So I'd like to be able to hand a little bit more of that off. And that's something that we'll be trying to do this year is, you know, bring in the salesperson, hopefully bring in an account executive, and do more of that. I do like going out to the schools and the kids and chatting to them. Like I think that's really rewarding and can kind of refocus like why you do it. So yeah, there are a few of the things. I suppose chatting to people, isn't it? Pretty much what I've summarized is that I like talking to people, but yeah, developing out the programs on the different aspects that we do. Like I think some of my strengths lie in being creative, which if you asked me 10 years ago, was I creative? I'd be like, absolutely not. But it's brainstorming, putting the plans together and, having the team around us to execute them really.
Were you always going to have a co-founder? Was that a conscious decision? Because I ask everybody this, if they're a founder or co-founder, what was your reasoning for having a co-founder?
Initially, when it started, so the concept was mine. Mohammed, I was in college with him. We were good friends. And he was like, yeah, it's a good idea. And I suppose I started creating the content, building it. And then he ended up being pulled into supporting with creating the content because there was so much news to cover. So he was kind of doing that in his spare time and supporting. So I think it was just kind of a natural progression. Like as we had it was like 2 years really where we were doing it as a extracurricular activity, I suppose, or as a hobby, trying to build it. And he had put a lot of time into it and supporting, and we felt that there was an opportunity there. And I think he wanted to move on from where he was. So it was just a good fit at the time. It's great, I think, to have the support of a co-founder as well. And I've met different entrepreneurs, and that's something that people that have co-founders like, is bouncing ideas off somebody else. And you know, there's some things that I do well, some things that he does well. Being able to know that actually he's back, making sure everything's going okay while I'm chatting to you or chatting to other people or out of the schools. Or like I was saying to you earlier, the Going for Growth program, I was there all day Monday. So making sure that somebody else is there to manage the team and everything that has to happen is there. So, and like a lot of entrepreneurs talk about how like lonely it can be to be an entrepreneur. So, yes, we probably still have an element of loneliness because, you know, he's come from an environment where he's worked in a huge company. So it's very different when for like the guts of 2 years, it was mostly like, you know, 2 to 4 people. And you also come in, like we're still like quite young, like we're 28 and we're managing people where we've come from being managed. So being the boss is very different to being an employee or even sometimes being a manager in a company. Like, you make the decisions and you're running the team and sometimes everyone's not always going to be happy about it. Like, yes, we get on really, really well with our team, but there's a line between, I suppose, business and friendship as well. So you have to manage that. So that can be lonely is, you know, most of my team are the same age as me or a little bit younger. So it is tough. It'd be different if I was like, you know, 40 and people were 25 or 30. Like, there's still that kind of a little bit of a gap. So I suppose that's something that I would find challenging sometimes. But look, there's a reason that we are the business owners. We came up with the concept. We believe in what we're doing and our plan. And look, people are buying into it. We've a great team. They really enjoy what they do and are really good assets to have in the team. Like, people are doing their jobs really well, which is something we're delighted about.
You mentioned the Going for Growth program. That seems like a phenomenal program. I know you've only just started it, but that just seems like an excellent program. Just give a brief highlight, because I like to promote it. So just give a brief highlight of what it is.
Yeah, so Going for Growth is helping female entrepreneurs develop the businesses and what they're doing. So really delighted to be part of this year's program. Met my group on Monday and really interested to hear all their businesses and what they're doing. Everyone's business is really, really different. There's some like support and advice that we can offer each other or strengths that, you know, one person has and that might support somebody else. Like some people have come from, you know, 15 or 20 year careers and they're now starting their business and have, you know, loads of leadership skills or management skills. And they're things that like I would find that, you know, I'm still trying to learn some of those skills. And then from my perspective, like, I suppose we have the, you know, creating a community, social media expertise, like things that we can offer to each other. So, looking forward to the next 6 months and working on that. It's you're meeting loads of great people that, you know, have gone through the program before or that are on different parts of the program. I'm on the Starting Strong cohort, I suppose. So Marissa Carter is leading our group, obviously has built like an incredible brand, products, everything.
Like huge name in the entrepreneurship space. Like, yeah, what a person to learn from.
Yeah, no, so that's amazing. So it was our first time meeting Marissa on Monday and she knew loads about her businesses, had very clearly done all her research and really understood each person's business and was already like challenging us on a few things and making sure that we're all being ambitious and making sure we're getting the most out of the program. And
that's so important though.
It's instilling the confidence, like, yeah. And that's something like,
but you know, people that challenge you as well in a positive way. You just talked about it there about the loneliness, and as an entrepreneur it is.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
You have people
you're
that
making
work
the decisions
for you,
all the time.
Work with you, but you often need that third space.
Yeah.
That external group that you can go, oh my God, everything's on fire.
Yeah, well, like we can, like if we have it in our business, like we are like knee deep, elbows deep, I don't know, submerged
deep
in our business all day, every day. So we have a particular way of looking at things and you're talking to the same people all the time. So even if I'm chatting to you, like I'll learn things from you and you might be like, Niamh, why don't you try this or that? And I'm like, oh, great.
Sometimes people say something, it seems so obvious to them.
Yeah, completely.
But you're just, you've all, not that
you have
done
different
it that way,
ideas.
You just have biases.
Yeah, like you've different ideas and like you've come up with them and then you kind of don't brainstorm them enough to adjust them to what could be better.
Yeah.
Like obviously like that's the purpose of us having a team. And like, I like when we all sit around and I'm like, I want to hear your idea because together we'll make it better. We'll come to the better product or we'll come to the better, content campaign or whatever it is.
Well, good is the enemy of great, right?
You know,
just things are good.
Yeah.
If things are good, you touched on earlier.
I'm looking for excellence.
But you have so many other things that you're doing that unless it's like failing massively, you're probably going to go, okay, we can other things, keep plowing on.
Yeah.
Whereas if someone goes, do you know what, if you just tweak that to doing it daily, you're like, oh.
Well, say some of the things, like currently we're doing some of the shows that I was talking to you about, like the rugby show, like that's internal in our studio. So I want to get out more and do more like fun things that will go well on YouTube. So it's out and about meeting people, like, you know, going to gyms, going to games, like that type of thing that'll give us other opportunities. So it's about pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. Yes, the studio stuff is great, but I want to do more. I want to get out and do more. So it's, yeah, when you talk to people and the group that we have, the purpose of it is to give each other a nudge and say, well, what's stopping you?
Accountability as well, though.
Yeah, for sure. So like straight away, we're like, one of the things that we are working on, like everyone had to set different targets, and people had different targets, say, for growing their email database. And I came back with what mine was, and Marissa was like, not ambitious enough. And I was like, fair enough. And I was like, that's fine. So yeah, if anyone wants to subscribe to our database, I have homework for Marissa to build it. So please do. But that's great. Like, she and the rest of the team, like, we'll all encourage each other, support each other, and get a lot out of the program in developing our businesses, and also our, you know, from a personal perspective. Like, people in business, like, I know I mentioned, like, I'm 28, like, people have asked me before, like, tell me about your career. And I'm kind of like, what career? Like, you know, I haven't really had one, you know? So we're, you know, learning from others all the time. Some things that we've picked up, like Muhammad obviously spent time in a big company and saw that, saw how things were managed. I've never really worked in a big company. Like, I've worked with a couple of startups. Like, I worked as a marketing director in a company in the US, and it was a very small company. So I've seen some things, and there's some, like, I suppose the sales experience and some, like, trade show and some confidence has come, I suppose, from my family in business. And, like, I've been working in my family business since I was probably 15 or 16. And so there's some skills that I've learned, I suppose, that is beneficial from being in a startup to then working in a startup, and great things that, say, Muhammad and some of our other team that have worked in bigger companies bring to the table because they've seen bigger companies. So, yeah. Yeah, I just find it funny when people are like, oh, what's your career been like? And I'm like, after my master's, I had a job for a year as a marketing director. And, like, other than that, I don't think there's anything that notable on it.
You're building a business. That's your career.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And that's the benefit of talking, like, asking, you know, people from different industries or who have the experience, their advice. And also, I suppose, that group as well. Like I said, there's a range of ages. Like, there's, you know, people from different backgrounds, but there could be somebody that's like 24 in the group, which is quite young. You know, put someone as far as somebody who might be 50 or 55. So
I think it's the sport's the perfect analogy, though. If you're, I can't remember which manager said it, but if you're good enough, you're old enough.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's the same with business.
Yeah, absolutely.
It stands on its merit. We talked earlier about content. If it's good enough,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It'll work well. Yeah, for sure.
It's all about the content and the quality of what you're doing. What's the next 12 months hold for Hersport?
Yeah, so upcoming is the Hersport Awards. So they'll probably have just finished by the time the podcast comes out. So a huge celebration of women in sport in Ireland. We will be crowning the Athlete of the Year, Young Athlete of the Year, Team of the Year, Community Award, and inducting somebody into the Hall of Fame. So really excited for that. That's pretty much what we're working on at the moment. Then after that, we will have... we did a charity event last year. She was going for a run after the death of Aisling Murphy, and to just try and raise awareness and, you know, financial support for women's aid. So raising awareness about, I suppose, what girls and women sometimes feel or experience in different situations, and, you know, educating, I suppose, the general public on that, so that everybody can play their part in trying to make it a safer place.
Great idea. When is that on?
That'll be on the 18th of February. So, it happens nationwide. You can do it in your own environment. You can do it as a club, and there'll be different hubs around the country where you can come and join it and do it. So, like, last year I was at the Phoenix Park Hub, and, you know, there might have been 20 of us went together and did a 5K run. Some people do it in their own club, and they might cycle, or they might run around the pitches that they have, or just wear, like, we have t-shirts and stuff. They might just wear the t-shirts training, and it's, I suppose, that connectivity of around the country that everyone's kind of doing it on the same day. But if you can't do it on the day, do it the next day or whenever kind of suits. So it's just about creating that awareness and supporting women's aid in the work that they're doing. So yeah, went really well last year, and hopefully we can have another good impact this year. Down the tracks, as I mentioned earlier, like, we'd be looking at you know, Gaelic Games and what we can do there, hopefully get a couple of shows up. We'll be looking at the World Cup, and we'll have lots of things going on for that for sure. yeah, just building more relationships, you know, with partners and supporting them in their goals and on what we can do. So, we've confirmed the continuation of the period panel, which is supported by Active Iron. So we talk about all things periods in sport and, you know, educating, you know, girls and women around their menstrual cycle and trying to instill, I suppose, confidence and also provide like valuable information for people. So that'll be continuing. Yeah.
Brilliant. Content, and the partnership content, with Riley content. Is going out this
yeah,
year as well.
Yeah. Super. So we'll be starting the partnership with Riley and going around to more schools. Like that's something that we're really putting a focus on, is growing the education side. Our membership platform was new last year in October. And so again, more content around that and just spreading the message. So yeah, as I said, there's loads of different things. I suppose from a content perspective, other events that we'd be keeping an eye on will be around the Olympics and Paralympics in 2024, the 50th anniversary of ladies football. And I'm sure there'll be more things that'll come up in between.
No doubt. Before we go, can you recommend a book that's had an impact on you personally or professionally?
Oh, an impact? You didn't tell me before it hasn't had an impact.
Or you've just enjoyed it.
I know that like the Aisling series, like How to Be a Complete Aisling. Or The Life of a Complete Aisling. I can't remember what the first one was actually called, but the Aisling series, I'm sure plenty of people know about the books.
Yeah.
But yeah, I, you know, read them. They're a bit of a laugh, I suppose, relatable for, you know, a lot of Irish girls in their late teens or 20s and 30s. So I have been given a lot of books for Christmas over the past couple of years.
I think you described them off air as nerdy books.
A small bit. So it's like, yeah, like learning, like things that I'm learning. So I got Atomic Habits and How I Built This for Christmas that I requested. So people weren't telling me to be a nerd. It was self-chosen.
There you go.
So yeah, that was an array and kind of understanding like gender equality and stuff. I have a couple of those books as well. So I have a goal of reading 12 books this year, which I know isn't very much, but sitting down, reading the books, learning from some of them, you know, podcasts are great to learn as well. Like I mentioned, Colin and Samir earlier, I listened to them. I listened to The Diary of a CEO.
I'm going to beep all these out, by the way, so you can...
You go.
There's no other podcast.
You're not like listen to any other podcast other than The Entrepreneur Experiment and the Hair Sport Podcast.
There we go. Nothing else. Joint partnership official live launched. Where can people learn more? Speaking about Hair Sport, where can people learn more about Hair Sport and about you?
Yeah, so hairsport.ie is where you'll see all of the news content, the interviews and everything. You know, there's information around the workshops that we do in schools, in clubs, and in workplaces. Yeah, pretty much everything is there. Like we'll have a calendar of events this year in terms of like women's sport and you know where to watch it or if we're having watch parties or events. So we'll be doing a number of community events this year as well. So like we brought people together for the watch parties last year. We had a beach day. We're looking to put a few cool things in the calendar.
So go to Hair
Sport.
Maybe
go to like Mandela or something. Fingers crossed.
That'd be excellent. But so hairsport.ie for kind of the main hub, and then you're across
everything,
all socials.
Everything
as well.
Else will be there. Yeah, and then just look up Hair Sport on the social channels. So we're, you know, on YouTube. Please subscribe. We're trying to build that. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I think that's everything.
Everywhere.
LinkedIn.
And then I enjoy LinkedIn. To learn more about yourself, LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Or listen to the podcast. There's a few more podcasts out there about me, but yeah. If anyone like wants any advice, I suppose, about being an entrepreneur or, you know, thinks that there might be collaboration opportunities and stuff, just yeah, give me a message on LinkedIn or nevahairsport.ie.
Bingo.
Pretty easy.
Neve, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a million for having me.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.